Is the Marshall Plan getting anywhere? On this program, Our Foreign Policy, we have scheduled for this broadcast a discussion of the Marshall Plan. At this moment in Paris, France, representatives of 16 nations are putting together a summary of what they can do among themselves to get back on their feet, and a summary of what they need from us if they are to be self-supporting. We're going over to Paris now for a report from Paul Archinard, NBC's Paris correspondent. And then we're coming back to Washington, where in our studios are members of the government who will discuss the critical situation in Europe as it appears to us in the United States. For an on-the-spot, up-to-the-minute report from France, we take you now to Paris.
A House Select Committee to investigate economic conditions in Europe arrived from Washington shortly after noon today. The visit is hailed by the press in Paris as both timely and necessary, for the economic crisis which exists in Europe now borders on the chaos. Help is needed to put the rusty old machinery back in motion. Financial, material, and, not the least of all, moral aid. Secretary Marshall's proposal created a climate of hope. It brought 16 European nations together to study and establish a balance sheet of European assets. It has raised many questions which concern the relations between the United States and Europe. One question is, do European nations feel that we are committed to helping them? I have interviewed a certain number of official people and others who, although they speak in no official capacity, are usually very well informed. Their answer is no. The United States is not committed to helping Europe. The economic situation of Europe is bad. It can be improved. As a friend in need, the United States can help Europe. It has done so in the past, but it is not obliged to do so this time. It is not committed today any more than it was obliged to take part in the war against Hitler. The United States has the means to aid, but in the final analysis, it is up to the United States to decide whether materially and morally it can give this aid. Another question which often crops up is, do European nations seem to be trying to work out a practical self-help plan before turning to us? The answer in this case is yes. 16 nations have been studying the problem in Paris for the past 2 months. The recovery of Europe is fundamentally bound to a working plan by means of which exchanges between European countries can be developed. Reconstruction, industry, trade all depend on the successful outcome of these studies. It is clear to European countries that more normal trade conditions should be established amongst them. For example, it is easier and more convenient to trade European merchandise for European coal than to have coal shipped across the Atlantic from the United States. The same applies to wheat. Europe cannot produce all the wheat that it needs, for the time at least, but it would be more natural to grow sufficient wheat here than to ask wheat of the United States. And that is why the 16 Power Conference is centered on organizing a pool of European assets to distribute and employ before calling on the United States. Furthermore, there has been talk of creating a customs union throughout Europe. One already exists between Belgium, Holland, and Luxembourg, which is giving satisfactory results. This union, the Benelux it is called, will serve as a model for limited unions between neighbor countries, pending a more general European customs union, which still presents many complications. The Nordic countries will have their customs union. France and Italy are working out a common plan which eventually may join with the Benelux of Belgium, Holland, and Luxembourg. And now, in view of Europe's recurrent needs for aid from the United States, comes another question. Do European nations feel that we are trying to dominate them economically? I cannot presume to answer for other nations, but as concerns France, and public opinion here can be used as an average example for the others, the mass of opinion does not believe that it is the intention of the United States to dominate Europe economically or in any other way. Even common sense communists don't really believe this, although they say it. They don't really believe it because they admit that United States aid is necessary. And when they talk of this danger of domination, it is for political reasons and to justify their own policies. Commercial accords have been passed between France and Eastern countries such as Russia, Hungary, and Poland. These accords have produced nothing. Failure to obtain results is not due to political reasons, but much more simply to economical conditions in these countries which are in no position to cooperate in any way. Western Europe could have purchased agricultural products from and delivered manufactured goods to these countries, but nothing has been done. And when the need is felt, it is in the United States that serious economic aid is sought and not in Russia. The communists are embarrassed by this state of affairs, and the bugaboo of American domination situation which they endeavor to agitate is lightly shrugged off by the public opinion, which has learned to understand what Eastern domination is like. So everyone agrees that the United States' assistance is necessary. But do they feel that this assistance under the Marshall Plan will arrive in time? Well, it is certain that if the Marshall Plan goes into effect only 6 months from now, the coming weeks will be extremely difficult. In France, this is due essentially to the fact that crops of 1947 are the worst in a century. The frost caused damage, the drought caused more, and there has not been enough fertilizer nor enough farm machinery. Resources and dollars, which were used for emergency purchases of food, have diminished to a point where dollar imports have been stopped on everything except essentials, such as cereals, coal, and fats. All machinery purchases have been suspended, and yet they are badly needed. They are needed for agriculture, for industry, and for reconstruction. The reconstruction plan was just beginning to operate. Now it is stalled and will remain so for several months until the Marshall Plan goes into effect. This means marking time, weeks and months of enforced inaction which will delay recovery or the beginning of recovery so many weeks and so many months. Britain is in the same situation, and so is Italy. And now you will probably ask if European people understand how government works and the importance of American public opinion in a final decision, and if they wonder why the State Department cannot give more commitments now. Of this you can be assured. European people are fully aware of the importance of public opinion in the United States. War is not so far away that they have forgotten some of its lessons. This power of American public opinion was specially felt during the war. During the very early stages of the war, people over here in Europe came to recognize it. It was fully realized through the efforts of President Roosevelt to make opinion understand the state of affairs in Europe. Later on, after Pearl Harbor, the power of public opinion in America stupefied the peoples of Europe, and some of the conquerors of that day, too, when a great nation came into the war with a surge and power that drove everything before it and ended in a red brick schoolhouse of France and on a battleship off the coast of Japan. No, indeed, there is no one here who thinks that the government of the United States can by itself distribute dollars to needy Europe. And that brings me back to the vanguard of a House Select Committee which arrived in Paris today to investigate the situation in Western Europe. All the newspapers here attach much importance to this visit. Without in any way wanting to diminish the role of the State Department, editorials explain that the findings and opinions of these men will be more important for their effect on public opinion in America than official government appraisals. The committee will be shown everything it wants to see. It will visit battlefields, now turned back to farmland after 3 years of mine removals. It will measure to what extent reconstruction has begun and bridges and factories have been rebuilt. And this because Europe realizes the power of public opinion in America and that this public opinion must be informed. I return you to Washington.
That was Paul Archinaud, NBC's Paris correspondent, reporting from France. Here in Washington, we have with us Mr. Paul H. Nitze, Acting Director of the Office of International Trade Policy, Department of State, Mr. James Boyd, Chief Bureau of Mines, Department of Interior, and member of the President's Committee for Foreign Aid, Mr. Richard Bissell, Executive Secretary, the President's Committee for Foreign Aid, and Mr. Sterling Fisher, Moderator. They're here to discuss the Marshall Plan. To continue, here is Mr. Fisher.
Mr. Nitze, can the Marshall Plan put Europe back on its feet?
You can't give a simple answer to that question. In the first place, before we can do anything, we have to know what Europe is prepared to do for itself.
You mean by that, Mr. Nitze, that there isn't yet a plan? I mean, Mr. Boyd?
What has come to be called the Marshall Plan was born last June at Harvard, when Secretary Marshall made his speech. Actually, it isn't a plan. Secretary Marshall didn't promise anything, but he did have some sound suggestions as to how Europe can get back on its feet. And he did show that we in America understand the problems facing Europe. Don't you agree, Mr. Bissell?
I do, Jim. I think that's one reason why it was of such importance. It made it clear to Europeans that we had a sympathetic understanding of their situation.
Dick, that speech gave them hope. It gave them the hope that if they could draw up a plan that would set their own house in order, we could be expected to try to help them with the things that they just cannot produce themselves at this time.
Yes, Mr. Boyd, and 16 nations of Western Europe went into committee quickly to decide on what they could do for themselves and what they needed from us.
But in the meantime, we've just not been sitting back. We have been doing a tremendous amount of preliminary work. We are making studies of the possible effect of foreign aid programs on our national resources and on our own economy. For the past 6 weeks, what is called the Krug Committee has been studying our capacity to produce in this country. It has been studying the domestic demands for goods, and it has been studying our needs.
Actually, the President has set up three committees to undertake these studies. In addition, the House of Representatives has a committee, the one that has just arrived in Paris, and the Senate has still another committee. What we do for Europe will be based on the work done by all of them after full public discussion.
Now, Mr. Nitzer, it looks as though if we decide to help Europe, it will have to be on a very big scale and for several years. The question is, what is the price of economic aid, and what is the price of refusing that aid?
But are we Americans strong enough to stand the strain of European aid, Mr. Boyd?
Yes, and we have already demonstrated that we are. Our exports during the first 6 months of this year have been higher than at any time in our history. At the same time, we have had the highest standard of living in history. We are rebuilding and re-equipping American industry more rapidly than ever before. And we are building houses and carrying on other construction at boom rate. There's your answer.
If we fail to help with European reconstruction, we may not be able to avoid involvement in European economic chaos because we no longer live in a vacuum. That is the price of refusing aid to Europe.
Paul, I think we can all realize that never before in history was a war fought with such planned and scientific destruction by both sides, of factories and mines and railroads. Nor have there been such enormous and arbitrary shifts of population in war. These have thrown Europe's economy completely out of gear, and the gears have been stripped. What's more, floods, droughts, and blizzards have held up European reconstruction. And in Europe today, there are grave political uncertainties.
Yes, but what the worried American on Main Street wants to know is this. Can we afford to undertake this enormous job of reconstruction ourselves?
Mr. Fisher, we cannot afford not to try or not to do all that we possibly can. We cannot afford it from any point of view, moral, political, or economic.
Mr. Nitzer, do you share that opinion?
Yes. From a moral point of view, we cannot allow people to starve or let countries sink into anarchy simply because they do not have enough dollars to pay for reconstruction materials. From an economic point of view, it isn't good business to allow an enormous productive plant to go to ruin simply for want of recapitalization. And from a political point of view, we cannot allow dictatorship of the right or left to sweep the world for want of help which we may be in a position to give.
Yes, but before we make any decision, our citizens are entitled to a report from Europe. They are entitled to know the details and why they should help. We've read in the press, Mr. Nitzer, that the State Department has had to send two of its top men over to Paris. And the implication is that the European Committee was not getting together the information that we Americans wanted to make that decision.
One of the important things about getting Europe back on its feet is that it should be undertaken by Europe, not by our prodding and guidance. In the first place, if we attempted to direct it, it would lay us open to the charge of attempting economic domination. In the second place, if it was our idea and Europe wasn't fully sold on it, it wouldn't work. We've sent men over to Paris for informal discussions with the committee. We said we'd do that from the very beginning. Secretary Marshall said we would give friendly aid in the drafting of a European program.
I think, Mr. Nitzer, it's been proved 1,000 times that Americans are the people most willing to aid in all the world, but they do want their position made clear. Now, is our position clear to the European Committee? Have we told them explicitly the conditions on which we Americans will consider giving them aid? Have we told them what seems to us necessary in order for them to be able to get their countries self-supporting?
We have. There are 6 objectives that we shall expect to see covered in the final report from Europe. We expect Europe to make an all-out effort in increasing its production of food, coal, and raw materials. We expect them to tell us not only what each country can produce for itself, but what it can produce to help other European countries. We expect them to have a plan that will stabilize their money. We expect some plan that will enable them to distribute among each other their surplus production before asking us for assistance. This means, among other things, a plan to do away with the black market. We want to see the freest possible flow of goods between the countries of Europe. We want it to be as easy as possible for goods from France to be marketed in Italy. That means cutting down or doing away with such things as quota restrictions on trade between each other. And finally, we expect a plan that will, after the initial few years, make Europe self-supporting. In other words, to reach a point when there will be no further extraordinary help from us. Instead, there will be a normal flow of trade. They will then buy from us what they need, paying for it as they go.
Mr. Boyd, I think we have a sort of a blind spot over here about Paris, which is so far away. Have we any idea, that is, any clear idea of just what has been done in Paris so far?
Yes, Mr. Fisher, of course we have. We know for one thing that the European Committee has drawn up, country by country, the critical items needed to get Europe back on its feet.
Well, now, just what are those critical items that are needed?
Wheat, for one, nitrate fertilizer for another, coal, steel, and rolling stock.
That's not all, of course, Jim, but those are among the key commodities. Others they are sure to need are mining machinery, cotton, agricultural machinery. We may well find, in fact, that what Europe actually needs is a more diversified list of items than we now anticipate.
Well, of course, we have some pretty serious financial problems of our own over here, personal problems and governmental problems. Have we any idea how long it's going to take before they are able to pay back what they buy from us?
We think it will take at least 4 or 5 years, maybe longer. We won't really know until we find out what their needs are.
Well, you mean, then, that for at least the next 4 or 5 years, we have to look forward to practically to giving them wheat and fertilizer and coal and steel?
Yes, but we expect the total for each year to get less as Europe becomes more self-sufficient.
Dick, we must realize also that whatever we do for Europe, it will be necessary to necessarily be minimum. Until Europe stands finally on its own feet again, its lot, even with our help, will be one of grave austerity.
You mean that a working man in Europe will have to face, along with his family, several more years of very hard rationing and grave privation. But can he stand it?
That raises a psychological point. The Marshall Plan has given Europe hope. It isn't just a question of turning over certain commodities to them to keep them alive. They also need the assurance that the continuance of a form of government that will give them hope of freedom is possible.
Well, we've been discussing what we expect from Europe under the Marshall Plan, and I want to turn to our own country and the reports we're drawing up. You've told us that what are the key commodities that Europe is going to need. Will our American resources stand giving them aid in quantity for several years?
Again, Mr. Fisher, I don't think it's a question simply of whether we can stand it or not, but of what the alternatives are.
In any event, the drain upon our resources caused by any foreseeable foreign aid program will be far less than the drain caused by present high levels of domestic employment and consumption.
Jim, I think the conclusion we will all reach is that if we back a policy of conservation, continue our policy of importing certain relatively scarce materials, put our resources to the best possible use, and make other necessary adjustments, this country has nothing to fear in the way of depleting its resources.
Now, Mr. Bissell, it seems to me that sounds a rather different note from one that we've been hearing from other sources.
I think we can conclude, Mr. Fisher, though, that neither our present rate of exports nor any future rate you can think of in connection with a program of foreign aid will be a dangerous drain on the national resources of this country. And I can add that there does not seem any prospect that supplies for our own people will have to be cut down dangerously, or probably even significantly, in order to help Europe.
Well, is that a personal opinion, Mr. Boyd?
At the moment it is, but it is based on some comprehensive studies.
Well, now, we haven't time to go into all the things we might have to export to help Europe, but just now you mentioned some key commodities. Let's take just three. Let's take wheat and coal and steel. Let's begin then with wheat. Can we continue to export wheat at our present rate?
That present rate is very high. In the fiscal year just ended, we exported close to 400 million bushels.
This year, Dick, we're harvesting a bigger wheat crop than we did last year.
Yes, but how long can we keep it up?
If because of food shortages all over the world, we need to go all out to produce food, we can still export 300 to 400 million bushels of wheat. Even though, as Secretary Anderson said this morning, we will be able to ship less grain than last year. And it won't seriously hurt us, provided the weather is good and we can continue to produce record crops.
Of course, if we have a drought, we will not have much wheat to export. If that happens, and there is still a world shortage, in other words, if there is still not a large supply of wheat in South America and Australia, we shall have to decide over here how much of our wheat to keep to feed ourselves and to feed our cattle, and how much to export by doing without.
Dick, of course, to maintain record wheat crops will increase the need for soil conservation and flood control. At the moment, more than 100 million acres of land, much of it our very best cropland, are being damaged at a critical rate. If that land is to be kept in production, we shall have to apply soil and water conservation treatment. This is a serious need. But with these precautions, a foreign aid program will not undermine our soil resources.
All right, gentlemen, you do say that we can stand our present heavy export rate of wheat, provided the weather holds up and provided we apply soil conservation methods and put in a program of flood control. What about coal, then? Currently, I understand that we're exporting nearly 500 shiploads of coal every month. How long can that go on? Coal is, of course, as everybody knows, a resource that you simply cannot put back.
Well, Mr. Fisher, we're not going to be exporting at this rate for long. It looks as though this year and next year will be the peak years for our coal exports because coal production in Europe is on the increase. And with luck, we shall have a balance over and above our needs of nearly 50 million tons this year, which we can export.
And remember that even if we have more than that amount to ship, it would be difficult to do it because we would be hard put to it to find the port facilities. But if we can ship 50 million tons of coal this year and the next, it looks as though that should tide Europe over until their own coal production gets well underway.
Yes, but nevertheless, that's still a drain on something that we may need ourselves, isn't it? We are never going to be able to get that coal back.
That's one resource that presents no real problem, Mr. Fisher. Except for certain kinds of coal, our present supplies will last several hundreds of years at the present rate of consumption and with present mining methods.
Well, then, let's turn to steel. How are we situated as to steel?
That's a critical commodity.
In what way? How is it critical, and in what way, Mr. Boyd?
Right now, our steel plants, as a whole, are producing almost at capacity. The bulk of our steel is used right here at home. Our regular export market is in Latin America, and Latin America has been a customer of ours for many years. Normally, we ship very little to Europe, but right now, Europe needs steel in great quantity.
The problem is this. As a result of the destruction of steel-making plants during the war, of present shortages of raw materials abroad, and of abnormal demands for steel to replace losses and to satisfy accumulated backlogs, there is an acute shortage of steel in all the war-torn countries. There is also an exceptionally high demand for steel here, of course, because of pent-up wants and the high level of business activity.
Well, let me turn then to you, Mr. Boyd, with this question. Just what can we do to supply Europe with steel?
Mr. Fisher, that's a problem that's going to have to be talked out when the European Committee tells us how much steel is needed. We do know, though, that the construction of new steel plants already planned and underway in this country will increase the supply of steel sheet and strip during 1947 and 1948. We also know that our present plant capacity for certain steel products, and for technical reasons, is not being fully utilized, and that by breaking some of the raw material bottlenecks and by employing known technologies, production can be increased. These steps may be sufficient for the immediate short-term period, but whether there will be enough for a long period, we do not yet know.
There are going to be several instances of materials we shall be hard put to it to supply. Some of the things Europe needs, we know we can supply. Wheat, for instance, and coal. Steel is one of the things that we may not be able to supply adequately without some adjustments.
Well, gentlemen, it seems to me that what you've been saying to the American listener all over this country, the man who's concerned to help Europe and who is also concerned to make certain that he doesn't damage his own country and his own economy in doing so, it seems to me that what you've been saying to him and to us indicates that we probably can help Europe and that it will not very seriously affect our own American standard of living, that is to say, it will not seriously affect our standard of living over a long period of time, and that it will not actually seriously hurt our natural resources in this country.
The question that people over here have to decide, Mr. Fisher, is not whether we can help Europe at all. We know well that we can. The real question is how much are we willing to help Europe?
And Dick
how far are we willing to go in doing without ourselves some critical commodities if they are badly needed there?
And, Dick, remember, from our viewpoint of our resources, our physical assets, we shall not be really vitally hurt there. That does not mean that all of us will have everything we want. There will be specific shortages of many items that are vitally important for European economy.
From the point of view of the individual American citizen, it comes down, I think, to this. Taxes and prices will not come down as much or as soon with a European recovery program as they might if we did not help Europe. That is why I say that the key question we have to decide is how much we are willing to help them.
Of course, first, we insist that Europe show that it is willing to help itself.
The Marshall Plan is really a test for Europe, then, isn't it, Jim?
And, in a certain sense, a test for the United States as well.
To make it work, the nations of Europe have to show that they can agree and that they can put aside selfish national interests and work together to get the whole continent on its feet.
At the same time, we will be called on to show how willing we are to back a program that will revive economic stability in the world.
I hope we've made it clear from this discussion that we are able to help Europe and that it is in our interest to do so. But will our help get to Europe in time to stave off collapse? We have a time factor to consider. Before any large-scale aid is given to Europe, Congress will have to act, and Congress is not due to meet before January. Legislation, therefore, cannot be expected before spring, even if all goes well. Meanwhile, some European countries, including France and Italy, are nearing the end of their rope.
Of course, Mr. Nitzer, you predict that help is not possible before the spring. We all remember that there's a great deal of talk in the press nowadays about the calling of a special session of Congress. I see that in the paper today it says that Senator Vandenberg says that is up to the president himself, so we do not know what action may be taken about that. What you're saying, of course, means that the Marshall Plan is in a grave condition in one respect, namely that it is moving at too slow a pace in putting Europe back on its feet.
I wish I could say that weren't true, Mr. Fisher, but I can't. Our own reports, as Mr. Lovett said in his press conference on Wednesday, are to the same effect. The situation will be serious if countries are not able to import food and coal during the coming winter. Anything can happen. We believe that our time schedule may have to be stepped up in order to get aid to Europe before the end of the year.
That was Mr. Paul H. Nitzer, Acting Director, Office of International Trade Policy, Department of State. Together with Mr. James Boyd, Chief, Bureau of Mines, Department of Interior, and Mr. Richard Bissell, Executive Secretary, the President's Committee for Foreign Aid, he appeared on this program to discuss the question, how is the Marshall Plan shaping up? Paul Archinaud, NBC's Paris correspondent, broadcast from Paris at the beginning of this program, a report on how the nations of Europe are looking at the Marshall Plan over there. Sterling Fisher of NBC served as moderator. Next week at this time, we bring you a program on Can the United States Ship the Goods to Europe That It Wants if we decide to support the Marshall Plan and give Europe the aid it wants? Vice Admiral William W. Smith, Chairman of the Maritime Commission of the United States, Mr. Richard Parkhurst, and Mr. Grenville Mellon, Commissioners, will appear on next week's broadcast to discuss whether the United States has the ships to transport the goods that Europe wants. Our foreign policy is heard at this time every Saturday. Members of the United States Department of State, officials of foreign governments, and members of the government of the United States and of the Congress appear regularly on this series in discussions of important aspects of our foreign policy. The NBC University of the Air invites you to listen to Our Foreign Policy Weekly. This series, presented as a public service of the NBC network and its independent affiliated stations, has as its aim to make more understandable the complex problems of international relations. Our guests for this broadcast were Mr. Paul H. Nitzer, Department of State, Mr. James Boyd, Chief, Bureau of Mines, Department of Interior, and Mr. Richard Bissell, Executive Secretary, the President's Committee for Foreign Aid. This series is coordinated by Murray Dyer. Stuart Finley speaking from Washington, D.C. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.